Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe in the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. What's up, my friends? Welcome to episode 111 of Jock Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Red. What's sip rep, dog?
Let's see here. We are 49 seconds in. We are 5x5. Operation Jock Talk is a go.
Well, that is some of the best words I've ever heard on a regular Sunday afternoon. We do hope you are prepared to be entertained and dazzled for the next hour or so as we discuss all things Mavericks and a few other tidbits we got for you. Before we get into the show, let me just tell y'all this. You don't know you traumatized until you know that you traumatized. Or you don't know that you have trauma until you get triggered. So y'all know I've been dealing with all this identity theft and credit card fraud and all this stuff for the last several weeks, months, whatever. So I had last week, I spent some time and I literally went through every banking credit card thing I have and set them all up so that I get a notification if somebody put a piece of 5 cent bubble gum on my bank account or my credit card. I get an alert. Boo, boo, boo. Hey, 5 cent spent on a piece of bubble gum. And I feel good about that. So we prepping for the show. I'm doing a little bit of research. I told Big Joe I need an extra 15 minutes because I'm deep in the vault. And all of a sudden I get an alert. $117 on American Express. Let me just double check that. Okay, that's something I got set up. That's supposed to go through every month. That's no problem. And right up under that, I see $200 pending from Shell. Duff. And all I could think of was, I got some gas at Shell 2 days ago. Did that thing, and I did a tap instead of putting my card in, but did it still skim my information? And now I got to get a whole new card when I just changed out all these cards about a week or two ago. So I called Amex, man, the fraud line. Do-do-do-do-do. Fraud, bro. Right here. It's pending. It ain't even went in yet. You know what that man told me? That man told me, oh, sir. Did you get gas? I said, yes, I did. He said, oh, sometimes they hold your card $200 or $300 on your card, and then they take it off once it goes through. I said, oh, so it's not fraud? He said, no, it's just part of the regular business practice. Now, you know me by now, though. What did I say? Why they do that? And he said, sometimes if it's a station where it's nobody's manning it, the people, I guess, pay for $10 and put in $50 in their gas tank or something like that. But anyway, the fact that I'm triggered and I got all this fraud in my life, I went and spent about 10 minutes chasing down some stuff that was not fraud. That's what I know I've been triggered, bro. Is life going to be like this or is it going to change at some point, though?
No, I knew that happens on some cars. They do that.
And check this out. I knew they did that on debit cards because they try to make sure you got the money in there. Okay, that's cool. I understand that. I just didn't know they did it with credit cards.
Yeah, in some instances, if you got a Cash App credit card, they'll do that. In some instances, they'll do that anyway.
Well, but, just be rest assured. I am vigilant on fraud these days. You can steal from me, but your ass is going to have to work for it.
Right.
Before we get too far deeper.
What about Cole Beasley, Michael Parsons, and Danny White?
I was just about to get to that.
Oh, okay.
Episode 11, 111. What comes to mind? So clearly, Cole Beasley, Danny White, and Micah Parsons. I'm mad at Micah Parsons right now.
Not Roy Williams?
No.
Not even.
Only if we're going to talk about classic bust in Dallas, then we could use him as number 11.
Yeah, don't ever take the best player off a losing team. How about that? That's some Parcells stuff for you.
Okay, you know, there's some truth to that now. Somebody got to put them numbers up.
Yep.
I said I was mad at Micah Parsons, but maybe I'm disappointed in Micah Parsons, so I'm not rocking his 11 right now. I would go with Danny White. Although I had some great conversations with Cole Beasley about route running during his time in Dallas. Fascinating conversations, really good conversations. Some of the stuff I love best about football is talking real football with NFL guys. That's some of my favorite stuff ever to do. But anyway, that reminds me, we can get into that later if we have time, because I had a good conversation that I'm going to share with y'all. Some of y'all probably think it's not a big deal when I tell you what it is in regards to sports and the Cowboys and reporters and media, and I'm going to tell you why it is a big deal. Now, on to your Dallas Mavericks, who are playing the Boston Celtics in the NBA championship finals, starting Thursday. I'm very excited about that. I think it's going to be a great series. There's much anticipation. To me, and y'all can go check the tape, because this is what I said, I picked Minnesota to win in 7, and then I said, but I love the way the Mavericks are playing, so I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'm going to be surprised if they win. And I picked Minnesota in 7 because I thought Minnesota's defense, after what I saw them do on 2 or 3 occasions with Denver, would be a far stiffer test for the Mavericks, and I was clearly I was wrong in that. And so I'm picking Boston because they got the home field, home court. But damn it, the Mavericks are playing so good. Before the series starts, I'm entitled to change my mind. But I want to make sure I'm not a prisoner of the moment just because the last thing I've seen has been the Mavericks playing at a high level. I need to be a little more objective about it. You got an early pick?
Yeah, I'm picking the Mavericks. I'm picking the Mavericks in 6.
Okay, how come?
Because Jason Tatum already acting like a joker. Because I saw an interview the other day, they asked him about Kyrie. Kyrie was all right when he was here. You know, it was all our fault, you know, that we didn't make it and all that. Dog, just come on out and say you can't stand Kyrie because he sucked when he was here. Say, hey, Kyrie is in a better place now, but he wasn't that when he was here. He was supposed to be the experience we needed to get us over the hump, and he was a jackass the whole time he was here. I wish Kyrie well right now, but let's be real. He was a jackass, and I couldn't stand him. Quit being that damn wishy-washy. You want to have Kobe mentality? You want to be like Kobe Bryant and talk about prepare yourself and have Kobe mentality? Have Kobe mentality. Say, we hope Kyrie come here and play his best, but we going to kick his ass because we didn't like him when he was here. Say that.
Hey, you know.
Say that.
You know what, Doug? I was just listening. And then when you said the Kobe mentality thing, I was like, you know what? You're right about that part. Like, Kobe would not mince words. Now, he might not be very effusive about it, but he would say something probably similar to what you said.
Yeah.
About, you know, he wasn't the player that he is now. He wasn't happy here. He didn't play like it. You know, he's in a better place. But, you know, it's about business. We'll catch up in the offseason. Something like that.
Yeah.
So fake nice.
Yeah, like, yeah, you know, it was our fault. It was everybody's. No, it wasn't. No, y'all was looking for Kyrie to lead y'all. Y'all was looking for Kyrie to do what he's doing for the Mavericks right now. Yeah.
Now that is a great point.
Yeah.
That's
what he wanted his own team. He wanted to be the leader. These are things that he asked for to get out of Cleveland. And he did the exact opposite in Boston. And now you back. Now you got a chance to play him, and you going, ah, man, it's all right. No, it ain't all right. It ain't all right. No, hell no. Let's be real about that. That's why I say, you know what? You gonna be soft about it, Jace? You know what? All right, because that dude disappears sometime.
No, he does. He will, and he does.
I don't want him to find it versus the Mavericks.
No, now he can. He can also come out and just be like, oh. That's why he's Jason Tatum. Mm-hmm. I think everybody would say that Jaylen Brown's a lot more consistent. But the Celtics have a great team. They've been one of the best. They've probably been the best team in the NBA all year. You know, they've gone through a little bit of adversity. Much of it, I'd say, caused by themselves. They tend to be like the Cowboys in the sense that they will play down to the to the competition. But you can say what you want to. At the end of the day, they won 64 games. They had the best record in the NBA. They've not been challenged in the East. All you can do is play who's in front of you and dispatch them quickly, which they have done. And so they are the worthiest of worthy opponents. This much I know, or I feel safe in saying this. The reason I don't have this much I know, I have no doubt the Mavericks will show up. Like, the stage won't be too big for them. Why? They got two killers. And as we talked for just a minute the other day against Minnesota, Kyrie said, hey, let me make sure we start this thing proper. And he went off for 25 in the first half of game one against Minnesota.
I think he had 12 of the first 24 points.
There you go.
Something like that, yeah.
And then at the end, Lucas said, whatever life y'all thought y'all got from game three, let me snuff this thing out right now.
Yeah.
And he had 20 in the first quarter, 10 in the first 3 minutes, and he hit the jumper from the logo that was like, hey, man, this is my night, baby.
From y'all just the logo.
Yeah, y'all can just watch me play tonight.
From the MFing logo.
Yeah, Doc. Matter of fact, if you go back and look at it, and I only noticed this because I was scrolling through Twitter. I have to take a quick aside. I asked you this before, so forgive me. Do you have Twitter? Because I send you a lot of Twitter stuff, and I'd be like, I don't know if you got Twitter or not. I should ask before I keep sending this stuff.
No, I don't have Twitter, but it's coming.
Oh, so you can look at it when I send it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. These are things we discuss on the fly. but if you, I saw a clip of Anthony. They were talking about Anthony Edwards, some comments he was making to his teammates during the game. He was mic'd up one game.
Yeah, I saw that.
Well, on that first three, where Luka, like, I'm talking about like 2 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
Luka hits one from like 28 from the left wing. And on the bench, Ann is like, did you see the little kid over there? He's wearing my jersey.
Yep.
But when he hits the shot, if you go back and look at it, we like 2 minutes into the game, Anthony Edwards' shoulders just slumped. And he was like, and his body language was like, oh, snap. This dude is on one.
Well, they don't play good at home anyway. Minnesota wasn't playing good at home. It's something about the building they can't play in. Kind of like the Cowboys was in AT&T Stadium when they first opened.
Yeah, there could be some truth to that.
Everybody housing them up in there.
So, you know, and it reminded me, when I saw that body language, it reminded me of one time my son's team, he was playing Little League football, man. I think this was the, I don't know, this was either the B team or his first year. I think it was his, I don't know, one of those years when he was 11 or 12, they were playing in the playoffs, and they got down 7-0 in the first quarter. And one of his teammates, like, oh, we're going to lose, man. And I was like, really, dog? It's the first quarter. But his body language was the epitome of a lot of players on that team, and they ended up losing 14-7 or something.
After you play a series against somebody, you know that you know who they are.
Ah, that's a good point. Boy, you're full of good points today. Yeah, don't need it full of poop. But you got good stuff to do.
I don't know if I'm ever full of poop. I've been around the world three times. I don't think so. But anyway, once you play a series, you know who that dude is. You know. Okay, we got a chance because he off a little bit. You know what I'm saying? We got a chance because we can do this, and he ain't reacted to that yet. But it's like he said in the press conference at the end. He's like, man, Louie hit the damn shot from the logo. I knew it was gonna be a long night. You know, the fifth game?
No, that was the sixth game.
Sixth game, you know who that guy is.
Right.
You know, you before you get there, you kind of say, ah, we played him a little bit, but game after game after game, you know that dude across from you is cold-blooded, and we needed him to be off tonight to win. And that's why that body language was like that. The whole team was like that. They just, like everybody was saying, they was glad they didn't get swept.
Yeah.
And it's just when you don't have the one thing Minnesota don't have, they didn't have, is balance. You know, there was not enough people to score the ball when Ant don't score 40. It just wasn't.
And he don't, let's say, go ahead.
No, he just don't have the energy to do that every game.
That's a good segue into this next topic. And we finna have what I enjoy. So one of the things I enjoy most about talking sports is a nuanced conversation, this case about basketball. And, you know, when I look at the series, and I haven't taken a deep dive on Boston yet. I just know Boston on the surface. But I'm going to take a deep dive on Boston over the next couple of days. And when we talk on Wednesday, my thoughts will be a lot more full on Boston and what they're about. But if we look at the Mavericks, and we look at, like, I look at the series off the surface and I go, okay, your two superstars going to cancel each other out for the most part. And then it becomes about your role players and who steps up. And for me, we didn't watch, especially me and Joe, I can't speak for the rest of y'all, but we didn't watch the Mavericks since their infancy. I know I have. Yes. I used to listen to them games with Jim Sparnarkle.
Jim Lagar.
Tom Lagar.
Pat Cummins.
See, the fact that we can list all them folks off the top of our head, we was there for the beginning, 15 and 67. So, yeah. I know the Mavericks. The Mavericks have spent their entire franchise history with James Donaldson. Roy Tarpley is really a four, although we could, for purposes of this discussion, maybe he was a five. And Tyson Chandler. I'm not sure they've had another center of real note since then. Those are the guys. And so the way they put this team together in the second half.
You didn't like Eric Dampier? Hell no. I ain't like him either.
I was going to say he was just a guy. He was cool. We got along great. Yeah. But he was just a guy.
Made a lot of money.
But he's just a guy. So to me, this series is really about where the big fellas continue to play the way they've been playing. Because if they do, I'm telling y'all, and again, I don't think I'm breaking news, but if they do, the Mavericks are going to be hard to beat because they literally have a center averaging, you know, over the last eight games of the playoffs, 20 points and 15 rebounds. Now, if it was one guy doing it, you'd be like, oh, damn, that dude is off the chain.
He'd be MVP.
Right. Well, it don't matter. Dude. But it don't matter if they consistently getting that from the two guys. Mm-hmm. Because they're almost, for the most part, although Lively, Lively is the better offensive player in terms of decision making and stuff. And he's the better offensive rebounder. But damn it, Gafford, he's been pinning shots, blocking shots, and he may be a little bit of a better defensive rebounder. But between the two guys, you got one devastating center to deal with. And to me, that's if they can play at that level, they're just going to be hard to beat because they cause such a problem.
You know what he's talking about? Two head centers. I think of the Detroit Pistons, Bill Laimbeer, and then James Edwards. And then later on, John Sally, Bill Laimbeer, you know, with the double head center. So it's not the first time, but it is kind of a champion. You can win a championship like that.
Yeah, because you just need the production.
Yeah, yeah.
And other combos
I'm not thinking about, but yeah.
Yeah, but when you look at this combination, and to me, I went to the JJT research department and looked up some stuff. And they're 8-0, the Mavericks are, when their center combination scores 20 points or more. And what did I just tell you? In the last nine games, they've been averaging 20 points, 15 rebounds. And they're 7-2. And one of those games they lost, Lively didn't play. And we saw the impact that he made when he didn't play. Now, you get off talking about the pick and roll. And so we're going to start there with why has it made such a difference with the pick and roll, you think?
Okay, so we got two superstars that are some of the best ISO players in all of the NBA, if not the best two ISO players, where you go one-on-one, you can beat your guy to the basket. But what happens if those guys are point guard with a point guard mentality? It gives them more options. You know, if Kyrie don't use the pick and roll, he can either shoot it, pass it, or drive it. Now with the pick and roll that they're running with Lively and Gafford, they give him a fourth option. Shoot, pass, drive, or dish it. And them guys run to the rim like crazy. They get to the rim like, that's easy money. Imagine if they just doing iso ball. I mean, what do you think they get off pick and roll? What do you think they get off lobs? What's the point in the JJT research? That's something probably you can go over the next time, is that the points off of pick and roll and lobs, God, that's just easy money.
Well, I think one of the things is, and I think I told you this stat last week, and I saw it on TNT. It was before it was 2 games into the Minnesota series. It was who had the most lobs in the playoffs, mm-hmm. most lob dunks in the playoffs.
I remember that.
And the Mavericks had 45, and you don't know where does that, okay, they lead with 45. So your natural reaction is, okay, well, not only who is number two, but is it 45 and the next best team got 40, or is it something else? Well, at that particular time, it was Oklahoma City tied with somebody else with 9.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they had 5 times more lob dunks than the next opponent. And what Joe is saying is easy money is that's 2 points. Like, so yeah, everybody falls in love with the 3 in today's NBA. But if I'm going to get dunks off of lobs, it don't get no better than that in terms of efficiency on offense. You can shoot all 3s you want to. If I'm getting dunks most of the time, I'll take you shooting 3s, even though you're getting a 3-for-2 thing. Because my dunk percentage is going to be higher than your 3-point percentage most nights. And so when you look at the way they finish at the rim now, both guys can finish. And somebody mentioned this a few weeks ago, and it's a great point. We've seen centers with stone hands. The Mavericks got 2 centers with good hands. So you can toss them the ball anywhere around the rim. They go get it. Plus, when they at that free throw line, you can pass it into him. Now, you don't want Gafford making too many choices. He just need to catch it and be decisive with what he's going to do. But Lively, he can decide to take it to the rack himself, or he can pass it to one of them dudes for an open corner 3. And it's a really effective way to look at the offense. And to me, when you look at the big picture, I had a good conversation with my brother about this the other day, is the Mavericks, man, used to be solely a 3-point shooting team. In the first half of the season, when the threes fell, they won. When it didn't fall, they lost. And I don't have the statistical data, but it's not hard to look up, and that's pretty much what it was. When they hit a certain amount of threes, buckets, made buckets, they won. And when they didn't, they lost. With this trade, man, and we'll get to the defense in a minute, but this trade, and once they figured out the point guards, Kyrie and Luka figured out how to use their guys, dude, they still a terrific 3-point shooting team. But now, especially with Kyrie, they added a mid-range game because Kyrie loved a mid-range jumper. Now, he'll pull up for a 3 and he'll shoot a 3, but he really liked to get in the mid-range jumper range. The baseline 8-footers, 10-footers, all of that if he's not attacking the bucket. So they now came up with a mid-range game with Kyrie, and then they got a lob game in addition to when Kyrie is driving to the bucket. So what I'm saying is they can now score from all 3 levels of the court, which makes them highly, highly difficult to stop because, as Joe said, okay, once they get in the paint, it's a make-or-miss situation. There ain't nothing you can do about it. If you challenge them, they throw the lob behind you for the dunk. If you play back, Kyrie going to hit the floater. Luka going to take that little spinning one-legged fadeaway. I mean, they just hard to stop offensively, man. Well, they were in the last series. Each series is different because Oklahoma City did a really good job on them. Oklahoma City looked like they did an even better job. Was that because they had Dort? And they had, why? Have we figured out why Oklahoma City was able to contain them?
Oklahoma City is all athleticism and no ass. So the reason that's why the rebounding numbers were such
right. the Mavericks' favor.
The reason they could keep up with them is because they were small, they were fast, but they was light. That's what we talked about. That's what the Mavericks' advantage was: their height and their rebounding. Oklahoma's advantage was their speed.
Right.
You know, the size. Right. That's why I like PJ. PJ was everything. He's everything we want him to be. He wasn't not so much in this series, but the series before, he was fast. In the first series against the Clippers, he was fast. The Oklahoma series, since they wanted to play Jalen Williams for the last on him, he was big. He even posted up. He right. out-rebounded him. He was kind of an enforcer. This series, he was more like, let me get in this corner and hit this thing when I need to. So, Mavericks, they got a lot of parts, man. They got a lot of moving parts.
But see, I think that's what makes them dangerous. And we've talked about this briefly at various points in the past. But, like, when they won their last championship, you can point to, you know, you put a team together, and we talk about it in football. We talked about it with Julio Jones going to Philadelphia. Like, okay, I mean, respectfully, Julio can't play no more. But you need a play in a game. He might could go do that for you. Mm-hmm. You know, Cowboys got T.Y. Hilton because of injuries 2 years ago. He couldn't play no more, but what did he deliver? A play in a game that helped him win a big game. And so your stars are going to do what they do. But if you go back to 2011 when the Mavs made a run, if you're a Mavs fan, who don't remember Corey Brewer stealing a game against the Lakers? Shoot. With like 13 points in the second quarter or the fourth quarter and helping them win a game. And you're like, oh, stat.
What was my man named Stevenson?
Deshaun Stevenson had some moments. Who don't remember? Patient didn't really have a lot of moments in the playoffs. But in that elimination game against the Lakers, it wasn't just Jason Terry hitting 9 threes. Patient had like 6. And so you need them cats.
You're going to think I'm crazy. But I wanted J.J. Barrera to be the MVP.
No, J.J. Barrera had some damn good moments.
Especially against the Lakers, man. They couldn't take the – you know, he was so mad that Odom knocked him down. He was so good. Remember, Odom got mad and knocked him down.
Nah, that was the other dude, the center.
Yeah, it was not Odom. Yeah, it was the center.
The 7-foot-1 youngster.
Yeah, he knocked him down. J.J. with that penetration, they couldn't hold him. That dribble penetration, right. They couldn't do nothing with him.
And so in different series – you need different cats to step up and be heard. Like, you don't win the Oklahoma City series if PJ don't have 27 one game and 29 another game.
Yeah.
You know, you don't win some of these games against Minnesota if Lively doesn't have some of the terrific performance he had early and Luka and Kyrie don't do their thing. But, you know, to me, what makes the Mavericks difficult right now is what we just said. They can score on all three levels. And I know it's shocking, because it is to me, but they've become a good defensive team. They ain't never been known for playing defense. They may have had some moments playing defense. Rick Carlisle is a really good coach, but he ain't no defensive-minded coach. And now, but you know who, you know, Jason Kidd has always been kind of a defensive-minded coach.
Yeah, I was going to go basketball. One thing we wasn't talking about is basketball IQ.
Yeah.
It's two things with the Mavericks to me. It's the IQ and then use of your energy. See,
what does that mean?
If you put an energy in the defense, like Luka, let's just go talk about Luka. Luka has been where he's had to carry the offense for four quarters forever. Now that he trusts Kyrie, now that he's getting some out of them centers, guess what? You can use your energy a little bit more on defense. You can dive for loose balls. You can go for the steal. You can shuffle them feet a little more if you ain't trying to do everything.
No, I said, look at you. No, I was thinking what happens is.
Why you keep being surprised on making good points? This is some backhanded ass compliment day or something. I don't know what we doing here, you know. But all right.
No, normally make these. Let me shut up, man.
Yeah.
It's all good.
Yeah, do that.
Now, I was thinking that. It's even heightened because you can see, you know what the point is at the game where you're like, oh, snap, we need to stop right here. So this possession, I can really do all the things you're talking about. Because we've seen him do that on two or three possessions where he's moving his feet. He's like, damn, is this Luka? Somebody dancing and he following all the moves. So now it's a very impressive thing to see, to watch them play defense. They close out really well. Boston has been the best 3-point shooting team in the league. You're gonna have to close out on them. And you know, defensive basketball to me, and again, I ain't breaking no news here, it's all about what you're willing to concede. You know, against Oklahoma City, they like, hey, y'all can have these threes. I hope you don't make them. Against Minnesota, they took a different approach, and it worked. So it'll be interesting to see what they try to take away from Boston or what they give Boston. Here's what you can have, but we don't want you to get this other thing. And, you know, Boston handled them pretty easily during the regular season, even though Luka played well. But again, this is a different Mavs team. It has a different mentality. It now has its confidence is at an all-time high. And I think it's just a different beast than what they felt 3 weeks, than who they played 3 weeks after the trade. And now it's, shoot, Doc. It's, you know, when you talked about basketball IQ, the other thing is because Luka, especially, and then Kyrie as well, have been so good for so long, literally. I mean, it's like great quarterback. There's no defense you're going to throw at Luka or Kyrie that they haven't seen. There's no coverage you're going to get. Now, you could trick them because you can show a coverage that you haven't shown before, and it may take them a game to figure out what you're doing, and maybe that's the game you steal or you take at the end or something. But because they've seen everything that you could possibly throw at them, it's just a matter of whether they execute it properly.
Well, it's three guys, too. It's Jason, too.
No. You're right. And whatever you don't see, Jason Kidd can go over film and say, hey, hear what they're doing, dog.
And he got the cachet. He's a champion.
Yeah.
So I think, listen to what I'm talking about. You know what I'm saying? I hear you. If you've done it, I hear you. If you ain't never done it, I don't know.
Somebody, one of the sideline reporters mentioned that during the game. They were like, Jason often tells them, he doesn't tell them, hey, here's what you need to do. He says, here's what I did or here's what I would do. You know, take that under consideration. And then when you're talking to when you're talking to cats and you're one of the top 5 point guards ever, talk about how to break a defense down, more than likely they're going to listen. Or at least put their own twist on it so that it's, you know, so that they can feel comfortable doing it. So I think you're right with Jason Kidd having 2 point guards on the team, basically. I think that's one of the other reasons why the offense is working so good. They got three terrific high IQ minds running their offense. And if the other guys hit open shots, you know, they're hard to beat. And I think the thing about the NBA, and especially with the Mavericks, is if we think about it, dog, the Mavericks get a ton of open shots. It just be whether they make them or not. You know, most of their shots in the corner threes and stuff, those are uncontested. And you ain't going to make 100% of them. And if you hit 45% of them, that's terrific. But
teams got to crash. They got to crash on Luka. He's so damn big. Once he get in the paint, it's automatic. If he don't get doubled in the paint, it's automatic in there. So that's why the Jones be open and Washington be open. You're right. That's why they get them damn shots, because ain't nobody handling Luka. You go big on him, he blow by you. You get little on him, he just going to push you around. And it take 5 years to get around his wide ass when you decide to go for the ball. So
this is very true. This is very true.
Like, man, it's pretty good. I'm all in. I'm all in. I've been a Celtics fan most of my life.
You know, I was thinking about that. I was like, I thought he was a Celtics fan.
Yeah, I am. But historically,
being a Celtics fan,
because back in the day, if you go way back in basketball, everybody was like, you know, the Celtics is a white team, the Lakers is a black team. And I just thought, being a historian of sports, I thought that's a bunch of bullshit. Because the Celtics hired the first black coach. The Celtics had the most black players in the NBA. Red Auerbach did the cheat code way back then. Y'all don't want to play these guys? I'm going to have all of them. You understand what I'm saying? He the only one, the only great player he didn't have was Bill Russell. I mean, Will Chamberlain. But he had Bill Russell. He had Casey Jones. He had all of those guys. And my uncle actually taught me a lot about the Celtics, just sitting there watching basketball. And it was my Uncle Tony, and he taught me a lot about the Celtics. And just watching them, it was one of them. They tried to make it a racial thing between them and the Lakers, and it really wasn't. You know, all the history, I don't know about the city of Boston, but the history with the Celtics was more black than anything. Did you realize that?
Yeah, I knew that.
Yeah, but a lot of people made it one way. And then when they did come through. I remember the 86, me and Ty was talking about the 86 team the other day. And they had the green team and all of that. Now, it don't mean I didn't want the Lakers to win when they was beating people, but I was just a Celtic fan back then. And people thought you was being bad or something if you was a Celtic. No. Hell no. One of my favorite jerseys to hoop in, I had like a practice jersey. I find a picture of that. I got a picture of that. I had a practice jersey with, you know, the holes in it I bought from Montgomery Wards. It was the NBA logo on it. And I'd play ball with the Celtics. Hell, I had a pair of weapons, too. Them damn black and white ones. That's the Larry Bird version of Magic, when him and Magic had two. That damn Laker version was ugly, man. All the purple and gold and all that. No. The black weapons was pretty tight. I even had the Lynn Bias Reeboks that Danny Ainge and Dennis Johnson ended up wearing. Yeah, I had a pair of those, too. So, yeah, I was a Celtic fan because the Mavericks suck.
Well, that's a good segue into this. One of the underrated moves, because Nico Harrison's done a terrific job putting his team together. And I remember when they hired Nico Harrison, my thought was, who the hell is Nico Harrison? He was a big wig at Nike. And I remember thinking, what the hell does that matter? And then when you read the stories, it was like, all the stories said Nico Harrison is a Nike executive and one of the most well-liked guys around the league from NBA players. Probably because he's dropping off a bag of money every time he see him. Because he was, you know, handling players and the contracts and all of that stuff. Well, one of the things that impressed me the most that we haven't really spent a lot of time talking about, we spent talking about the result but not the move, was as he put this team together, man, they get Kyrie for Spencer Dinwiddie, Finney Smith, a 2029 first-round pick and 2 second-round picks. Right, that's a lot, but it's not a lot. I mean, you like Dinwiddie, you like Finney Smith, but they just guys.
That's a can of beer, dog.
Right. It might be craft beer, but it's still a can of beer.
I guess.
You know, and then they made the trade for Lively. You never knew Carson Wallace, so you couldn't love him, even though he's a really good player for Oklahoma City as a rookie. But they got rid of Bertrand's contract, which gave them some flexibility to move, you know. And then they traded Rashawn Holmes in 24, first-round pick for Gafford. That was a big deal, not just because you got Gafford, because maybe unless you played 2K, you knew about Gafford. But other than that, you got rid of Rashawn Holmes' contract, which also gave you some flexibility. Before the season, they had signed Derrick Jones Jr. to a deal for the minimum. And he had offers to go elsewhere, but his agent was like, dog, you need to go, one, where you want it, which we've heard time and time again from people for years, whether it's free agency or scholarships. He said, two, where they have a defined role for you. Because if you get a defined role, you could ball out and we could turn this into a big payday. If you go somewhere where you don't have a defined role on a minimum contract, you might get lost on the bench. So he listened to his agent. He got that defined role. And he's been terrific. But the move that I really love, man, was when they traded Grant Williams for PJ. And it ain't got nothing to do with PJ. It has everything to do with saying, hey, we acquired Grant Williams from Boston. We thought he'd give us 3 and D and all this other stuff. and he's an asshole. Oh, he doesn't fit our culture.
Yeah. He was a
and
jackass.
Don't nobody like him. Yeah. So let's get him the fuck up out of here.
Yeah, he was a jackass.
Like, I mean, that's literally what they said. Because most GMs do what? Damn, man, we made this trade. I wish it had worked out better. Come on, let's see. But they were like, nope, this dude don't fit. Let's get him up out of here now. Ain't no need to wait till the offseason. Let's just move him. And at that point, wasn't nobody even thinking about no championship aspirations. It was just, he's such a bad culture fit for us, we don't even want him around.
Where did they think they was going to play him?
They thought, I mean, they signed him to do exactly
he was what a small, T.J. Williams is doing. He was a small, small four. He was a medium-sized three, no speed, no consistent jumper, a whole lot of hustle and trash-talking attitude.
Well, they thought that, I mean, they wanted some attitude. They thought he could hit some threes. They thought he would play defense.
He was losing his mind. He was changing his shoes and shit. I don't know what that dude doing. I think he wore Lucas, and then he took Lucas off, and then he did something. I don't know, man. It was a lot of crazy stuff coming out about. I ain't have no use for him anyway.
Well, they bought him to serve a purpose. Once they discovered very quickly he couldn't serve that purpose.
Yeah, he was out of here.
They did to Jimmy Johnson. They didn't sit there and cry about it and be like, damn, we invested. No, they like, who can we get to do it up out of here?
Yeah.
Oh, y'all don't like P.J. Washington? I can see why you don't like him. He ain't doing this and this and this for you. Okay, fine. So they traded Grant Williams. We don't even think about Seth Curry. They traded him in a 27 first-round pick for P.J. and 2 second-round picks. And that's how these Mavericks have come together. Because P.J. Washington, as Joe has told you, gave him that defense, that three-pointer, some of that attitude. You know, Derrick Jones Jr., give him that attitude and that defense. And then with their centers, you now got three above-average defensive players. And then your other two guys have been inspired to play a little defense because the other three guys are so good. So it worked out good. But it's all because, to me, Nico Harris made a lot of good moves. But then when he made that move to get Grant Williams up out of here, to me, that was fantastic.
Yeah.
That was all about, hey.
For sure.
It's a culture thing. Let's just get him out of here. We only want cats who want to be here and who can play. And if you don't fit that category, you got to go. We don't care how we acquired you or when we acquired you. Your ass is up out of here. And so, to me, that was one of the underrated moves of the offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, I scratched my head at that because I didn't see no value in Grant Williams as a real player and as a 2K player. I ain't seen none of that. So I'm like, he too small? I don't know. But I think that P.J. Washington thing going to go down in history because of the way he's playing for us. Who knew he could play D like that? I had no idea. I had no idea.
You know, so much of sports, man, is buying into your role, understanding your role, and buying into it. Sometimes it's on the player to do that. Sometimes it's on the coach to fully explain, hey, this is your role. This is why your role is important. This is how it fits into the big picture. And this is why if you do this, we can win.
Anthony Thomas from Michigan for the Cowboys. Remember, Parcells was like, look here, man, you're going to play special team. That's how you're going to make it. He said, I ain't playing no special team. All right, see you, A-Train. You out of here.
Yeah.
Because
you got to buy in.
Yeah, you got to buy in. You got to find one thing that you do best and do that best. And he did that for a lot of players. He did that for a lot of players and ended up being special team players and getting some play in the games. Yeah. Yeah.
And if you buy in, you give yourself and the team to be successful.
Yep.
And then maybe, you know, the next season, if you don't like that role, you could change it. But I always think it works best because sometimes coaches don't explain the role. They say, this is your role, but they don't explain the big picture, why it's important. Like, I found it curious. I thought it was good, but I found it curious that last year in training camp in the offseason, Dak and McCarthy spent so much time, to me, talking about how, this year we're taking each individual play and we're telling everybody on the team why their role on this particular play is important. And how I interpret that is, all that meant in the, you know, a very surface view is, you supposed to be running across a clear out route, but you don't think you're getting the ball, so you half-ass it. And so now the field is congested, and it results in an incompletion or an interception or a busted play. Or, you know, you're not putting the detailed work in because you don't really understand how you fit into this play, and how, even though it's not designed for you or it's not to your side, it's not important. So you just kind of half-assing it, and now the play is messed up because the backside dude came and made the play because you did a half-ass job of blocking or whatever your assignment was. And so I always think it's better when coaches – take the extra time to fully explain it. Here's your role. Here's why it's important, whether it's a play or whether it's something bigger. Because then there's no room for misinterpretation and misunderstanding from you or the player.
Right.
And then you know if they ain't doing it, it's because they chose not to do it.
Right.
Just like your kids. And if they choose not to do it, it's consequences for your behavior, whatever they are. Getting cut like Anthony Thompson, or getting a spanking, or getting a grounding, or whatever it is. These Mavericks are going to be good. It's going to be a great series. I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to taking a deep dive on the Celtics, because I don't really know much about them. Even though I've been watching them play, I haven't been paying attention to watching them play. To see, like, who's going to – you know, especially because they haven't been playing with Porzingis, so they're a different team with Porzingis, and he can do some things.
They got to reacclimate him when he get back. That's a decision they got to make. You gonna keep Horford, or you gonna bring Porzingis off the bench? The one thing that they have, that the Mavericks have, is size. Right. They got big point guard. They got a big three. You know, a small forward. They got Jason Tatum is kind of a flex guy.
Yeah, I think they're switchable too. They don't mind switching.
Yeah,
1 through 4. So it's gonna be a chess match. First game will be interesting, and then the adjustments off the first game will be even more interesting.
I think the Celtics gonna get in foul trouble. That's what I think. If they play Horford, they gonna get in foul trouble. They play Porzingis. If he comes back, then they gonna be out of foul trouble because he can block shots. But Horford Horford can't move. Horford is smarter than Porzingis, but he don't have the physical ability anymore. And I think if they play him, then it's going to be a lot of grabbing and shuffling and, you know, jumping over screens. You know, they talking about the Mavericks be using them illegal screens. They don't use no – they just knock the shit out of you. You know, I don't know about this being illegal, but they be crying about their screens. They got two good ball handlers and guys that don't mind screening. And guys that get cussed out if they don't screen.
You know,
like Gaffer got cussed out. We say he tried to tell Luke, man, my bad. Luke was like, no, I don't want to hear that shit. When I tell you to come over here, bring your ass. I need that screen. You know. I think it's a good matchup, but I don't care. I'm all in on the Mavericks, man. We got to do this, man.
Well, that leads me to one last point I'm gonna make before we move on to the block. And it was it involves Tim Hardaway Jr. and Jalen Hardy, and I was as I've told y'all many times, I enjoy having deeper conversations about sports. And the one thing so many fans miss out on, to me, is that they forget that athletes are people, that they're human. And you just can't say, I mean, you can say whatever you want to say, but you just can't say, hey, Hartfield, go do this. And then when he look at you crazy, be like, why is he looking at me crazy? You know? And what I'm getting at is there's so much criticism from Jason Kidd. And I read some that I went back and forth with this dude on Twitter, probably my fault, the other day. And he was like, Jason Kidd don't deserve no credit. He played Tim Hardaway Jr. too long anyway, and he never played Jalen Hardy, and he should have. And I was like, just consider this, dog. I said, Tim Hardaway been a pro for a long time. There was a stretch during the season of about 3 or 4 weeks where Tim Hardaway helped the Mavericks win some games they wouldn't have won because Luka was out and they was going through some injuries. And then that was right before the period of time where he just lost his game and he ain't been no good. But Jason Kidd, as a former player, I think, understood, I'm going to keep giving him opportunity, because he kept talking about, we trust him, we're going to give him opportunity, we trust him. And he trusted him and gave him enough opportunity, because Ryan Washington used to talk to me about this all the time. He said, I'm going to give you all the opportunity I can give you. And then what, dog? Hey, Joe, I appreciate what you're doing, man, but you're not playing well. It's been an extended period of time. I'm going to give Taylor a shot to play. And if you've given that dude enough opportunity, then you get what you get from Tim Hardaway right now, which is he the consummate teammate. He over there cheering for his boys. He the first one on the baseline to pick up somebody who done fell over there. He's fully engaged. He's not pouting. He's not sulking. Because he know he ain't played well. He know he had every opportunity. And when it was time to bench him, he couldn't say nothing but, all right, Jason. I understand. If you do that without doing all of that, maybe he's a true professional, or maybe he become an asshole. And well, he on the sideline, and he in the meets like, yo, man, why he picking on us, Joe?
Well, there's one thing you add to that. If you give a guy a chance, you got to give him positive reinforcement too.
If you give him
positive reinforcement, I was telling a friend of mine this the other day. If you give him positive reinforcement and it don't work out, then you just pull a guy aside and say, "Hey, man, it ain't working. You ain't ready. Don't worry about it." But if you being negative, like, "Oh, I knew he was gonna screw up. That's why you suck, man. That's why we don't play you." Well, then you just kicking that guy down. But you got to give him opportunity, give him positive reinforcement, and if it don't work out, he understand why he ain't doing it. If he don't understand, he can take his ass home.
Right.
But I don't worry about I'm not concerned with Hardaway Jr. because every series, like we talked about, has a new player come out. Has, you know, for whatever reason, you know, that guy's sitting there, he's on the team for a reason. So right. he might be fooling around, be the MVP of this year. I doubt it, but he might be the MVP of this series, or he might win us two or three games.
I was going to say, now he is the classic case of a dude who can show up and help you win a game.
Yeah. I'm just saying, you never know with the series. Maybe it's somebody that can't guard him when he come in the game. And he give us 15 every damn game. And you go, oh, Hardaway Jr. is the guy this series, you know. I mean, I give a better chance of him doing that than Exum.
Right. And that leads me to my next guy, which is Jalen Hardy. There was so much talk. Give Jalen Hardy play. Let him play. Let him play. Let him play. Instead of Dante Exum. And I think one of the things Jason Kidd was doing all season was getting Hardy ready. Like, hey, man. I don't know when opportunity coming. It's going to come at some point. Work on this. Get your game right. I'm going to need you at some point. Don't know when, dog, but I'm going to need you at some point. Work on this. Work on that. Work on this. Work on that. And then, because when opportunity comes, I want you to be ready. We ain't going to have no time for you to work yourself in.
Right.
And what happened? Dante Exum had – I can't remember the game, but I remember the moment. He had like a very tentative moment in the playoffs. Against the Thunder, I think. And you saw Jalen Hardy show up like the next game. And Jalen Hardy was very aggressive from the rip, because that's the only way he know how to go. And I think Jason Kidd probably pulled him over and said, "Hey, man, I told you get ready. Your time is coming. It's arrived. Let me see what you can do." And I think he told Dante Exum the same thing he told Hardaway Jr. "Hey, man, we're going to get a young guy a chance. We need some offense, blase, blase, blase." And Dante Exum happy to be back in the league, man. He's like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
But my point is, athletes are people, and you have to treat them as people. You can say, they make so much money, they should just do whatever. Okay, do you do that as your job, no matter how much money you make? No. Everybody wants self-respect and respect. And you don't even have to like the decision, but if you understand it, regardless of whether you like it, you can live with it. You can roll with it. Okay, fine. They did that. I'm going to give me another gig. But, you know, you got to wait for a minute. So I think Kidd's done a terrific job of handling those two situations and understanding how to maximize, you know, their skill set and how to get the most out of them before moving on. And, you know, Jalen Hardy, the experience he got in the last series will serve him well in this one. Because he ain't met a shot yet he ain't liked.
We'll see.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think he's, I think he just got attitude. Like, he's a, to me, he's a scorer. I mean, I don't think he'll ever be a high percentage shooter, but if he played enough minutes, he's going to get his 18 to 20 a game because he's just a scorer. I can imagine why he was such a dominant player in high school. Where'd he go to college?
I don't know.
I don't either. I just remember he showed up. Seemed like he just showed up in the G League and just started killing folks. And I don't know. I don't know what he did before then.
How many points did he get against Minnesota?
Oh, he didn't get much. But it's, to me, it's all about his attitude. Like, I think one game he scored 13 and 12 minutes.
So what you're saying is the reason we talk about him, you think he's going to have a bigger role against Boston?
Now, I think he's going to have the role that he had, which is about 12, 14 minutes a game. But he's the kind of – like when Dante Exum comes in, he's not really giving you anything other than solid – you hope solid play don't make no mistakes. Hardy might give you some mistakes, and he might give you something more too. So that's all.
Gotcha.
He has more upside than Exum. Exum is a more known quantity, but Hardy, Jaden Hardy, can do some things to help you stretch a lead. Is all I'm saying. Let's move on to the block, man. Well, it was a very eventful week. My granddaughter graduated. Very proud of her. So I was happy about that. But then, you know, man, it was a hectic week. My stepmother rolled through, and I've been trying to call her for a week to say, hey, when you coming through? And confirm she was coming through. She called me the day before. Oh, I'll be there tomorrow. Okay. Can I get some flight information? I got some flight information. She didn't pack a battery on her phone, so her phone was dead the whole next day. So I had to spend about an hour looking for her at the airport. But I was glad to see her. Then my brother called me on Friday, the day of the graduation. He called me at 7 o'clock in the morning. My brother's much younger than me. He's in his mid-30s. Matter of fact, he just turned 34 Friday.
Yep, happy birthday.
But we talk frequently, but he never calls me at 7 in the morning because he's in Phoenix. So I'm like, oh, snap, I hope nothing's wrong. Pick up the phone. Hey, dog, what's up? Nothing. I'm at the airport. I'll be there at 9:30. I said, be where? In Dallas. I'm coming. I'm like, boy, you and your mama rolled the same way. I was like, can I get a heads up? He's like, hey, man, I told you I'm coming. I'm prepared to be at the airport as long as I need to be till you or somebody come pick me up.
You know what? I was thinking, man, his stepmom get around. Because, you know, his birthday is close to mine.
Right, right.
And so I saw them take pictures together. Yes. And I thought, damn, did she come to Dallas by way? I mean, did she go to Phoenix by way of Dallas? I was like, dang, she get around good.
Nah, bro, she going to Paris next month.
Okay, then. that's how they end up together. I got you.
Yeah.
I got
you. Nah, she was just in Phoenix last week. So, I mean, you know, you retired, you can do what you want to do, man.
Yeah, you can.
Now, this was all complicated by the fact that the storms had knocked out the power in DeSoto. So they couldn't stay in DeSoto. So they had to go stay at my daughter's house in Waxahachie. So it was a lot of moving parts. Did them storms have any effect on you?
No, not that bad. No, not. I mean, just a lot of rain. I know a lot of people got trees. It was more east of here.
Yeah, which would make sense because it's in Dallas.
I have a cousin live out in Forney. She got hit hard, and her daughter was home by herself.
Young daughter?
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
Well, them storms were storming, man. I don't know if I told you. I tell you, the tree fell on one of my workout partner's car.
Yeah, there's a lot of them trees and stuff. Yeah.
We at the gym, dog. We working out. And we heard a crack of lightning. Okay. Then the lights went out at the gym for like 10 seconds. Now they all slowly coming back on. He look out the window. He like, duh, tree just fell on my car. Luckily, he had a big F-250 truck. But there was a little bitty sports car wreck right next to him that got cracked right down the middle, man. But the lights have still not been on in DeSoto, bro. They've been off for like since last Friday, man.
Wow.
Not since last Friday, since whenever them storms, they've been off about 5 or 6 days now.
Yeah, some power outages. As a matter of fact, you know what? Garland had power outages. My daughter had power outages out there.
Yeah, dog.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
It is a long time.
That's a long time.
I wonder how they handle that. I know that my wife was telling me that we've had power outages in the past, that she's called the electric company and gotten a credit toward the bill on the power outage, you know, on the power that we didn't receive. She's done that.
You know what? I need to tell them about that. That might be something that they can do.
It's been a while. But I don't know if the home insurance, sometimes they refund you for the food you lose, but dude, I don't know if that's home insurance or not. I don't know if that's,
it's things worth checking. Change. But here's the problem. I'm taking a very quick exit ramp. Somebody at the graduation party, one of my granddaughter's aunt said, hey, you can get reimbursed for the food you lose during that, but you have to make sure that they're not counting that for a claim. You know what I mean? Like, even if it was $400 or $500 worth of food, do you want to claim it? And then they raise your premium by X amount of dollars?
Yeah, who's paying for it? Who reimburses you? Is it the electric company or the insurance?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe it's the electric company.
Well, there ain't no claim with that.
Yeah, so, yeah, that would be good. You know what? This is a good question that needs to be answered because the lights been off for a week. They've been having to stay, like I said, at my daughter's house. So anyway, it was a wild weekend in terms of that. But the graduation at Duncanville was out at Globe Life. It was a tad bit wonky, just because I think they screwed up personally. And here's why. They introduced the kids, and the kids are all walking through, and you can see them on the Jumbotron. But they're hard to hear the names, so I'm straining to hear the names because you want to capture your kid coming across at just the right time for a video or picture or whatever you're trying to accomplish. But they didn't have any pictures, and this was not it. So I'm straining, and all of a sudden I heard my granddaughter's name. I'm like, oh! Because I was not prepared because I didn't know they had started the O's yet. Because that's her last name. And so I've got her, and so it's all good. So the ceremony's over. It ran pretty quickly, pretty efficiently, that part. And then, dog, they started showing all the pictures of the graduates. And I'm like, this feels to me like somebody forgot to hit the button when it started. And now they're trying to make up for it by showing the picture now. But it just was hard to... It was just hard to follow. But all's well that ends well. We got the picture done. And then I love my stepmother. But she operates on a fly by the seat of your pants mentality. And that's okay. Because it's been like that for 45 years. So I accept it.
As long as you know. You know.
My granddaughter got about 20 people at the graduation. We all sitting in different sections because I wasn't in charge of this. I just went with the flow. If I had been in charge, we'd all been seated comfortably next to each other about an hour before it started. And everybody could have been on their phones doing what they do for that hour. You set, you straight, blah, da, 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 da. Instead, we arrived just as it was starting. So you had to sit where you had to sit. Now, that being said, let me ask you this, Coach Hartfield. This is a graduation. At this point, it started at about It's about 10 minutes into it. So they're still doing a valedictorian speech, which, aside from the valedictorian's parents, ain't nobody really paying attention to. I hope y'all know that that's really how it goes, and that's okay. And so we are looking for a seat, and there's five of us in this particular party. And as you would expect, it's pretty crowded because we're on time. We're right there as it starts instead of getting there early. And so we see a pocket of three or four seats. Okay. Is anybody sitting there? Yes, we're saving these three. Dude. That's okay. I understand that. These two women at one place, at one seating, man, they was trying to save an entire row. How do you feel about that?
I don't know, man. You know what? That's why you got to get there early.
Okay. You know what? Know,
you want to scuffle with two women? You know what I'm saying? It's like
okay,
first come, first serve. I don't know.
Me and my brother looked at each other because my stepmother's the kind of person who would talk to a fence post.
Yeah.
She, you know, if you're in a foreign land and you need something done, you would love to be with her because it's going to get done somehow, some way.
Yeah.
She could talk her way, navigate her way through anything.
Okay.
That's her.
Okay.
But so she was talking to these ladies. She was actually, because I was listening, because I would, like I said, I'm not running this one. So I'm just taking instruction. And she asked the ladies very nicely, excuse me, is anyone sitting here? Dude, the attitude these women got back just for asking if anybody was sitting there. Me and my brother was like, man, they deserve to be cussed out. But anyway, the last part of this was, dude, because, you know, once they don't let you there, you kind of salty, but you move on. And we ended up.
So she couldn't talk them into letting y'all sit there?
Nah, and the ladies was like, they was ready to fight, man. So she backed off and she found a couple seats. And then me and my grandson and my brother, we went to another section. And we actually stood up for most of it. And then my son popped up and then my daughter came. I mean, it was very disjointed. But, dude, that roast. But, you know, I'm watching the road now because now you've been kind of mean about did the whole thing.
Somebody better come sit in them seats.
Dude, them people did not. The ceremony started on time at 6 o'clock. When we were trying to get seats, it was about 6:15. Them people on that road, man, did not show up till 7 o'clock. And I was just like,
I'm all right with that.
Nah, man, it's, you know.
They got there first. They blocked the seats off. Now, I wouldn't have said nothing else to them, but I'd have been irked if nobody ever showed up.
Yeah, now they finally showed up.
Okay, well, what was you gonna do? Is you gonna sit there and then get up when they came or something? Or?
Let me tell you what saved them. This was saved them, dog. The ladies in the first two seats had on red t-shirts, and I'm talking to my brother because, you know, the attitude is what got me. If they had simply politely said with a smile on their face, "Hey, I'm sorry, we've got a bunch of aunts and uncles coming, and they'll be here very shortly," That's one thing. But you had to see the look on their faces, like, it was like, bitch, why you asking about these seats? Take your ass on. That's the vibe that they gave. And so, man, I looked at my brother, and I was just about to open up my mouth and say something, and I saw people at the end of the row also had on these bright red t-shirts. And I said, okay, maybe that's the end of them. Because you know what I was finna do, dog? I was finna go down the back end of the aisle and walk over and say, excuse me, and sit right where I wanted to sit.
Why you ask them then?
No, I'm talking about because I wasn't part of the asking. But I was going to go through the back way because I ain't like the attitude. But then when I saw the mother folks, I was like, okay, let me chill out and relax. It's not that big a deal.
Yeah, I ain't got time for that. I'd have found mama a seat and me and Chad would have.
That's what ended up happening.
And what's my man E would have stood up and said, all right, let's go. You know.
Yep, that's what happened.
Yeah. I'm proud of you. I'm proud of you, man. Because it probably would have been two dudes, you'd have tried to use them gym muscles to move them around or something.
Hey, man, I had some Kyrie growth and maturity over the last few years, man.
Yep, that's probably why you're still breathing.
So Oh, so back to my stepmother being feet fly by the seat of her pants. When it's all said and done, we got about 20 people in my granddaughter's party. That's who's there. And then we're all in different little sections. She sends me a text midway through. Where do you think we can go to dinner? And do we need a reservation? And I said, Carol, we got a party of 20 on a Friday night in Dallas after a high school graduation with about 1,000 people in the class. I don't know that this is going to be a whole lot of options a reservation out here.
True that. But guess what? And guess what? If mama / grandma / big auntie want it, it's going to happen.
Yeah, dog. I showed the text to my brother, man. I just said, dog. I started laughing.
Yeah.
And we ended up going to Texas Live, which is right there at Globe Life.
Yep, that's enough room to feed a ton of people.
Here's the problem, man. Everybody was there watching the Stars game.
Parking, yeah.
Nah, so we walked there. Oh, and I didn't tell y'all about how it took us an hour to find my granddaughter afterwards to do all the pictures. But we walk in to Texas Live, and we walk in. Everybody's there for the Stars game. So there's no way you can see the party of 20 or even 15. And so we ended up having to wait till the Stars game was over. By that time, everybody's stomach growling. And we finally ate. It was a good time. But it was crazy, man. It was wild, but it was an unforgettable night for her.
That sound like a good time, man. Sound like good family time right there.
No, it was, man.
I don't mind that by the seat of the pants. My wife got some anus like that. Now, mine is a more planner now. Well, I'm sorry.
Right.
One of them is seat of the pants. She want to have that fun that you're going to have, but you're going to regret you had it. And the one you met is pretty fun, but she going to have it all mapped out for you.
Yeah, so it's all good. I'm much more of a mapper. But I've learned when I'm not running it, to just let it go.
Go with it. Sometimes you never know where you're going to end up. And sometimes that's a good thing. You may wake up in the morning and say, I'm going to go do this. And then you end up at a party at somebody's house, meeting some people or having a good time. And you go, now you never know where life going to take you.
Right. The highlight of the weekend was the next day. It was the graduation party at my daughter's house in Waxahachie. And it was a big family thing. There's probably about 25 people there. And my granddaughter's about to cut a cake. And I said, we're not going to get a few words? I mean, not just a couple? And she said, oh, okay. And she turned around. And my granddaughter, who is smart as the day is long, and I just don't say that. She's highly, highly intelligent. But she's as stubborn as one can be. If it ain't her way, hey, man, you have a hard time getting it done. And she delivered about 45 seconds of the most thoughtful, heartfelt words I've ever heard come from her mouth. And I was truly moved by the words. And without revealing them all, she acknowledged she could at times be difficult while appreciating the support of her inner sanctum in helping her through what had been a very tumultuous and difficult senior year, in part because her dad died unexpectedly midway through it. So I was really proud of her for that, and made for a really good weekend. She wants to be a chef.
I believe she will be a chef.
Yeah,
how about that? One thing I think about when I hear them words, she's stubborn and all of that. You can get that out of them. But as a woman, especially a black woman, you're going to need some of that. You're going to need that intelligence. You're going to need that stubbornness. You're going to need that stick-to-itiveness. And I never coached that out of my daughter. And I'm glad to see that y'all didn't get that out of her, because some people will kill that. Some people would take that spirit from them. But they're going to need that.
No, you just try to channel it in a positive direction. Because it's a lot, I say about a lot of people, you have a lot of positive qualities. you got to figure out how to maximize your positive qualities, you know. But anyway, it was a great weekend, and she had a good time. And, you know, it's onward and upward from her from here. And I already gave her a list of stuff to do on Monday. And it was punctuated by, hey, you ain't got to go to school, so make sure you get it done. It's about her car and making sure she take care of some car stuff so that it continues to run. I was like, you can't play with this stuff. You got to get it done. So get it done by Monday and send me a report by 1 o'clock that you have accomplished your tasks. I appreciate it. Thank you. But that was the weekend, man. I think that's a good way to sign off, bro. I'm getting all melancholy now. You know, I only got one more. It's my grandson. He's only 9, so I got a little ways to go before he gets out.
Yeah, my cousin Desmond graduated this week.
From where?
I don't remember. I think, I don't remember where he graduated from. I just know it was high school. They had a party for him. I didn't make it. I had some other stuff to do. Right. But I'm going to hit him up. I'm going to hit up his registry today. I think he graduated today, maybe. I don't know if they – I didn't know they did it on Sunday, but somebody said he graduated Sunday. He's graduating Sunday.
Depending on the venue, if it's too crowded, they could.
They'd probably do it in the afternoon, maybe.
Yeah. So, but no, it's a big time in your life when you graduate. It means you got one of your first goals accomplished. It means you can really kind of start your life now. And, you know. It's an exciting time, and she was highly excited this weekend, and that's good. So we always appreciate Smokey John's Barbecue, home of the Jam Session Bowl, over there at 1820 West Mockingbird. I suggest that you get over there, spend some time at Smokey John's. Just don't run through. Spend some time. Look at the menu. I mean, you ain't going to find a Jam Session Bowl there, but spend some time on that. And after you've looked at a few options, go get the Jam Session Bowl. Jam Session Bowl is delicious. It is food to live for. Now, if you're never familiar with the Jam Session Bowl, let me tell you about it real quick. It's a mac and cheese base or a mashed potato base. And then what they do is you get your choice out of 2 out of 5 smoked meats. I usually rock with the brisket and the sausage. And then all the stuff you find on loaded baked potato, like bacon bits and cheese and sour cream and butter, chives, all that stuff, they put that on there. And then they drench it with that sauce, or they drizzle it with that famous Smokey John sauce, and it is to live for. Ask anybody. If you run into Joe, ask Big Joe, what about that Jam Session Bowl? You run into Clarence E. Hill Jr., ask him about it. If you run into Aunt Minnie, ask her. They'll all tell you the same thing.
She got the catfish.
Man, can I tell my story?
Okay, then. You got to be real. You're going to mention Aunt Minnie.
Well, she got the catfish, but she said next time out she wanted the Jam Session Bowl.
Okay.
Ain't that what she said? I thought that's what she said. Well, if not, we need to get it for her. I thought Aunt Minnie had the Jam Session Bowl.
No, she had the catfish, and she said it was outstanding.
Oh, we'll see. That's because she ordered off the menu.
Oh yeah, she loved that. I'm going back pretty soon anyway. I'm gonna get them. I'm interested in them wings, man. And my wife loved the way everything else looked. We didn't get to try. We could have tried. Put like this. We could have got one of everything because it was pretty good.
Nothing wrong with that. Wednesday wings is smoked wings is the way to go.
Yeah.
But that's the Jam Session Bowl. It is food to live for. Everything off the Smokey John's menu. Made from scratch at the crib, which is the restaurant. If you need it in your life immediately, then all you got to do is go to SmokeyJohns.com, click on the marketplace, and get the sauce or the rub sent to your crib in a couple days. No problem. If you got to have it right now, like before tomorrow, you can find it at HEB. It's on the shelves. Waxahachie, Burleson, Allen, McKinney. It's everywhere these days. Swing through there, pick up the rub, and enjoy some Smokey John's today. Smokey John's Barbecue, 1820 West Mockingbird. It is food to live for. It is what? It is love in your mouth. That's Smokey John's Barbecue. Remember to follow the show at the Real Jacques Talk on YouTube. We're about to drop our second episode of Jacques Talk coming up real soon. First one's still available, obviously, with Darren Woodson. You can follow the show on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. You can follow me on Twitter at JJT Journalist. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. And then I'm on Clapper, where I do a lot of videos about the Cowboys and the Mavericks. Go download Clapper and check it out. You can thank me later. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor is the handle. So for Big Joe and the Big Rig, until we chat again, you guys be blessed.